on this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Do the news media weakens your immune system? I mean, chronically elevated cortisol, we know, makes you more prone to infections. And so, like, the panic porn that pervades the media.
There are some doctors I know who are setting up all their peptides internationally, and then the patient needs them, they get shipped from an international locale. Like, wow. That's the only workaround.
Because they work so well.
If you're looking at them for a long-term relationship, perhaps a litmus test should be their ability to interact with your pheromones, with your odors, with perhaps a few of your small poop molecule.
Health. Performance. Nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and much more. My name is Ben Greenfield. Welcome to the show.
Well, I recently got back from a trip to LA where I was speaking at a private event down there, and I had a chance to sit down with a couple of super interesting guys, my friends Max Lugavere and Crosby Taylor. We had an absolute geek fest, just jam-packed with our top tools and tactics and tips and nutrition slash training slash life slash spiritual slash relationship hacks of late. Recorded as sort of a round table, each of us sharing with plenty of rabbit holing as we talk through our latest self-optimization strategies. So you're going to dig this one. I'm going to put all the show notes for everything we discuss at bengreenfieldfitness.com/three-way. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/three-way. So who are these guys? First of all, Max has been on my show before. I'll link to the other episodes we've done. He has his own podcast. I've been on his show too. He wrote this book called Genius Foods, followed that up with another book. I believe the other book was called Genius Life. His podcast is called Genius Life. I'll link to all that in the show notes too. He's a filmmaker. He's a health and science journalist. He's a New York Times bestselling author. You've probably seen him on TV before because he's been all over like the Dr. Oz show and the Rachel Ray show and the doctors, internationally sought after speaker. And he's talked all over the place, TEDx, the New York Academy of Sciences, South by Southwest, you name it. Cool guy. Crosby Taylor is a fashion model and a former college football athlete turned biohacker and sugar-free dessert chef, as you'll find out in the early part of this podcast as we sample some of Crosby's fabulous cookies, which he says allow you to eat dessert and burn fat. He also has tried every diet fad from vegan to the body ecology diet to paleo to alkaline to super high fat ketogenic and experimented with everything and is just a wealth of knowledge and happens to be really good at making cookies and cupcakes and donuts and pancakes and cinnamon rolls and ice creams and chocolates too. So Crosby's cool just because he's, you know, full of amazing food and baked goods that you can eat whenever you want and not be guilty.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. It contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. That'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office. My cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. carolbike.com.
So $1 million question, fellas. Are you going to taunt me with this giant pile of chocolate chip cookies that's like 1 foot away, well within arm's reach of me for this entire show? Or am I allowed to go Cookie Monster while we are recording?
You have to Cookie Monster as soon as possible. And I made those like...
totally gross. I'm going to take my gum out and put it in.
I made those like an hour ago. So oh, I didn't even put them in the fridge yet. These are still fresh.
You're selling the house, Max. It's okay if I put the gum... Totally. Are you taking the table with you?
Totally fine.
Okay. Don't worry. I'll Lysol it afterwards.
I don't know. It's Ben Greenfield's chewed up gum. I feel like I could sell that.
You probably could eBay it or something like that.
To the CrossFit community.
I actually have sold like old sweaty triathlon clothes on eBay before. Okay, so I'm going to grab this cookie. We should have video going. Gosh darn it.
We'd have to be wearing
pants if we did video.
Let me just get the video. I'm going to
slowly and lovingly tear this cookie in. Ooh, it's moist, so that's bonus. Now, what is in this cookie? Now, take a right. All right, Crosby. It's like oily. It's tender.
Yeah.
It's chewy.
Uh-huh.
Pretty good texture.
Yeah.
What is it? You got to tell me this is healthy or something. Or
yeah, of course. Okay. Of course.
Okay.
So no sugar. I mean, that one actually has... I'm doing like a new metabolically flexible
cookie. Only 4 grams of psilocybin per cookie.
There's only 3 grams. There's still only 3 grams of sugar per cookie, but I sweeten those ones with an organic maple syrup powder and honey powder.
Mm.
Yeah. So... it's still like great fuel, but they're also gluten, grain, and nut free. So there's no almond flour. I don't use almond flour.
What do you use as a flour esque?
The base is a coconut cassava mix, both organic.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
And there's also collagen in it, as well as in my cookies, I'll only use saturated fats for the fats. So I have organic grass fed butter and pastured eggs.
So how come not pork lard? That'd be a good one to throw in there.
Well, you know, it would be
kosher.
It would be, but I don't think that it just wouldn't. It just doesn't taste as good. I think you can fry better.
I'm actually joking. I don't think pork lard would work well.
No,
I actually
and a baked good, but I think it'd be good in if you wanted to do cook donuts. Mm. If you wanted to fry donuts, people used to do it in lard.
That's true.
That's like the old way of doing it.
I have. I know you guys are probably fans of Bel Campo since they're
huge
right
fans
down here.
Shout out to
I
Bel
have
Campo.
A shout out to the folks at Bel Campo for the best burger in town.
Bel Campo's my merce. It's I got a blue bag over there. It's literally like my man purse. It's just a small Bel Campo.
Oh,
it's a small Bel Campo bag.
Well, I have a bunch of their suet.
Like, have you guys ever had like the beef suet, just like the big chunks of fat that they send up in bags?
I've never tried it. I think my sole exposure to suet is when Paul Saladino showed up to my house.
Oh yeah, he likes the kidney suet.
Which
is like that dense fat right around the kidneys. But the beef suet, you know, there's obviously a whole lot more of it in a cow.
Mm-hmm.
In areas other than the kidney. So they have a bunch of this suet, and what I do is I melt it down. So I have like the fat, but there's always like these little, I think they call them cracklings left over. You guys ever have like those pork cracklings? Like,
love them. Yeah.
What is it? Epic. They make like their pork rinds and pork
rinds.
Cracklings. Yeah. You can kind of cook down the beef suet, strain off all that liquid fat, and then fry up these leftover chunks of suet. And it's just like a crackling. And so I'm on this kick now where with lunch during the day, cause it kind of makes, you know, usually I'll have like a lunchtime salad or something. But I heat up a couple of those cracklings, and I put a little bit of raw honey and sea salt on them.
Oh,
oh my gosh, they're so good. It's just like pork fat, honey, and
sounds
salt.
Amazing. Shout out to Chicharrones. I'm a huge fan. They're similar. They're comparable. They're like, yeah, the pork skin fried in its own fat. Mm-hmm. That's what you want to look out for. One of my favorite on-the-road snacks when I'm traveling are pork rinds, but you always have to look at the ingredients list because sometimes they'll fry. I mean, the pork skin has its own lard usually attached to it, but sometimes these manufacturers will fry them in soybean oil. They'll poof it out.
Yeah. Why'd you have to add fat to my fat?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah.
Well, anyways, so we had this grand scheme. I was going to be down here in LA for a few days, and I thought, you know what? We should get the three of us together and just geek out on some of our latest tips and tactics and tools and self-optimization techniques, because I know you guys have some pretty cool flavors in addition to the cookies that you throw into the mix. So to direct this conversation somewhat and keep us going from completely off the rails, I figured we'd go round table. And just like go with the topic and like just riff on it for a little while about like what you're really most excited about for that. So
it's like it's like a big Air One date.
Yes. Kind of.
It's like sitting at Air One and just being normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Without the paycheck, the cookies were free. You just saved me like what, $42 at Air One?
Exactly.
Of course.
Cause I would have bought like the $14 tiny 2 ounce jar of coconut yogurt.
Are you being shy?
I'll have one. Mm-hmm. I'm actually very impressed because Crosby, you were saying, but then I guess you got cut off. These are metabolically flexible cookies.
These are my metabolically friendly. Yeah. Flexible cookies.
They can touch their own toes. Those cookies.
Wow. Wow, these are so gooey. They're much gooier than they are normally.
They're much more like
that's
cookie
the word
that
I was
you would
looking
get at
for.
A restaurant.
Yeah.
As opposed to my other ones are great. The sugar-free ones are delicious, but there's a difference. There's like a chewiness. There's a texture difference. And that's, you know, the caramelization of those actual real sugars.
Yeah.
Even though they're, you know, fructose sugars, they're actually still going to give that caramelization, which Lakanto, the erythritol, doesn't. Mm.
Yeah.
So that's the big difference.
That's what a lot of people don't know about Lakanto. It's not just monk fruit. It's monk fruit with the sugar alcohol.
It's the sugar alcohol, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, which can also lead to a little bit of digestive distress.
Yeah, so if you have digestive issues, which is why I wanted to create these alongside the sugar-free ones, is I'm going to have an audience that's going to want these because they have digestive issues or they're okay with honey and maple syrup and they like to have those sugars in their lifestyle.
They just don't like to own or be proud of their farts.
Right.
Like, you know, it's a natural fermentation process. You should just own it and be proud of it.
Farting in a flatulence in the context of a social setting is inconvenient to say the least. So
Yeah,
we want
especially
to be,
on
we
a
want
date. You don't
especially
want to be on a date.
Everyone should have a bottle of poopery handy.
We got
if
a single guy
results.
Still. Max knows he can't be having the flatulence on a night out, especially since we're back. Like, you can actually take a girl out right now.
Well, if you're looking at them for a long-term relationship, perhaps a litmus test should be their ability to interact with your pheromones, with your odors, with perhaps a few of your small poop molecules, just to make sure that agrees with them so that should that happen, such as a Dutch oven scenario, you know, later on down the road, that they're going to be okay with it.
Yeah, there's definitely I have a friend who likes to, like, on a first date, he likes to actually make a point to fart in front of the girl because it breaks the ice real quickly and establishes right off the bat that he's comfortable doing that with the girl that he's with.
Hmm.
I don't know if I would go that far.
He should write a relationship book.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe he shouldn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to some degree, it's a sign that your bacteria are spitting out those postbiotics. You know, your gut microbiome is mm-hmm. doing its job. And
yeah,
one of the obvious fermentation byproducts can, you know, or they can be gases. So
yeah. Hey, look at me. I'm a man. I'm humble. I'm open. I'm transparent. I just let one rip. That's how much you can trust me. I'm not fake. This is me. Me and my bloatedness and my butthole.
Would you say that if you started taking a new probiotic, you might potentially be more gassy?
Oh, absolutely.
In the transition into a new probiotic because it's changing the gut bacteria. Yeah,
microbiome shifts often tend to produce a large amount of gas, and sometimes not, right? Sometimes if you have a high amount of like methanogenic bacteria, which you can determine via, you know, one of those biome tests, which, you know, the whole gut biome tests I don't like as much as just a straight up stool panel for yeast and parasites and fungus and the more acute issues. Nor do I like the fact that many of these biome companies are like prescribing certain probiotic regimens based on your test because there's no evidence that you can by taking certain probiotics actually
it's just a big sell.
Meaningfully adjust that biome. But you can see something like, oh, well, I genetically have a high number of methanogenic producing bacteria, or let's say sulfur digesting bacteria. Therefore, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, et cetera, for let's say a date night would probably not be the best idea for me. And then from what I understand, there's certain bacterial strains that can almost kind of like crowd out some of the sulfur producing or the methane producing bacteria. So you can shift that just slightly.
Good to know. Definitely good to know. Especially if you're single.
I definitely, that happened to me. I started a new probiotic by a company called MitoLife. It's a spore-based probiotic. It's really good.
But MitoLife, is that Matt?
That's Blackburn's.
Blackburn. He lives right up by me. He's been coming to my house for dinner parties.
Oh, no, man.
He's a real character.
He's a character.
Oh, he always shows up with like some paper bag full of whatever, homemade goat cheese and some new, you know, vitamin E.
That's crazy.
And,
you guys live right
and
near
a special lecture for me about why I shouldn't be using my fish oil. And
He hates the omega-3s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because of their potential... Their fragility and their potential for what would be called not oxidation, which is actually a natural process that occurs in the body and generates like signaling free radicals that support healthy inflammation, but peroxidation, which occurs to an omega-3 if it gets heated, if it gets exposed to a lot of sugars in the bloodstream, if you have a lot of underlying inflammation, high iron. I think in a metabolically healthy scenario, you can consume high amount of omega-3s, even those, you know, fragile ones from, let's say, fish oil, and not be at risk of a high amount of peroxidation. But if you're inflamed, you know, tons of or excess UVA and UVB radiation or other forms of inflammation or radiation, and, you know, it's a hot oil or hasn't been treated properly, or you're in a state of excess stress or high blood sugar, I think it can do more harm than good to have like an omega-3 as part of your supplement stack.
Interesting.
I think it kind of depends on the scenario.
Yeah, but also that's where... I mean, demonizing omega-3s and particularly fish oil is where I think sometimes there's a disconnect between looking at speculating mechanistically and what we see from like outcome data, randomized control trials that will use omega-3 supplements as an intervention for whatever it may be, whether it's to reduce triglycerides. We know that there's now a pharmaceutical available. It's basically purified, hyper-purified EPA.
Right.
You know,
which is
4 grams.
Odd. It's an EPA-based oil that they've done these large randomized clinical trials in. And from what I understand, they actually didn't do a similar trial on DHA and EPA in combination, which theoretically would induce even greater benefits, you know, from like a neural standpoint or a cell membrane standpoint than just the EPA-based omega-3s. So, you know, but you're right, Max, like you can say that theoretically consuming fish oil because it's fragile would lead to peroxidation in your bloodstream. Yet when you look at the large human clinical trials, we're seeing like lower triglycerides, better heart disease outcomes, you know, variety of factors that show that that's for some reason not occurring, or it's, you know, the pros outweigh the cons.
Exactly. I mean, with every treatment, you have to weigh the benefits versus the risks, right? And there's a risk-benefit analysis that you're doing, consciously or not, with everything that you do, pretty much. You know, with every single thing that you do. And every healthcare practitioner, I mean, every treatment is going to have risks, no matter what. I mean, so I think to just throw the baby out with the bathwater is, it's kind of like anti-science in a way, you know? I mean, there's a lot of good, I think, that comes from fish oil. And I have no financial affiliation with any fish oil company, but in regards to cardiovascular health, in regards to brain health, I mean, that risk is definitely there. You want to make sure that, I like to say that if you're going to, you know, if you're going to max out and spend your money, you know, on any one supplement in particular, like you want to make sure that you're getting the highest quality fish oil that you can afford, you know, because whey protein tends to be, you know, whey protein, but there's a big, I think, valley, like CVS brand fish oil that you get compared to something like
those are definitely rancid,
you know, right? Like a Nordic Naturals
clean,
or whatever,
clear pristine waters, full of unicorn tears and
to like there a, you go, yeah. to like a Keon,
anchovies that were massaged to each like, day until they're harvesting, yeah.
And shamanistically blessed. Well,
you know, I was going to see if you guys wanted to start with exercise, but since we're on the whole like nutrition bandwagon, let's start here. What's one recent nutrition habit, whether a food, an ingredient, a meal preparation style, or anything else that you guys have adopted of late that's just been like a shockingly big win for you or something that's just become a staple in your routine?
Well, one of the things that I started doing over the past year, just because I've had more free time and gyms were closed, I took up boxing. So I don't know, Ben, do you dabble in like martial arts, boxing?
Yeah. Down here, you know, I've dropped in and trained with, what's his face? I'm forgetting the guy's got the boxing gyms down here. Is it Tony?
Which boxing gym?
He's been on my podcast before. He's like a former, he's like from the UK, he and his partner.
Fortune?
They've got a boxing gym down in Santa Monica. I forget his name. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I've done that.
But you do it, yeah.
Then I own one of these fight camp things in my gym.
Oh, that's
got
awesome.
The Bluetooth sensors and the gloves that will track your number of punches per minute.
Yes,
and then
speed.
You've got somebody on the screen who's shouting out your combos like 1-3-6.
That's
you know,
awesome.
5-4-1. And so it's cool because you're training mentally and also physically at the same time because you got to be on top of the combos that they're calling, which I like about boxing.
Yeah, so I've been doing that. I went from having zero experience boxing or fighting of any sort to doing it multiple times a week, and I've been doing it now for about a year. I generally really enjoy fasted workouts. Mm-hmm. I find that the combination of not having that post-meal fatigue that you sometimes get when you do it, even though the circadian data seems to suggest that later in the day you're stronger and more coordinated,
mm-hmm.
I find that a morning workout, and I credit Crosby to some degree for that, because that's kind of Crosby's routine, and I jumped on that bandwagon just because I wanted to work out with him, and I found that I had more energy during the day,
like,
during my workouts when I would work out fasted. You also get that sort of benefit from the morning cortisol spike and the fact that you're like hungry and you're using your next meal as a reward.
So many benefits. You get the cortisol upregulation in the morning, which arguably should best be attained by getting out and looking at sunlight as early as possible. Like that's the very, very best way to get that cortisol. Probably one of the worst ways is a giant cup of coffee in the morning, despite the fact that I like that. And it's fantastic for my morning bowel movement. Like in an ideal scenario, actually, Andrew Huberman from Stanford just talking about this on a recent podcast, how, you know, amping up that cortisol too early in the day with too many mechanisms can be problematic versus saving some of that cortisol and epinephrine release for later on in the day. But some of these more natural, you know, so-called Zeitgebers, like these circadian cues, like light, specifically sunlight or blue light, exercise, and in some cases a meal can be really good for regulating circadian rhythmicity. But I'm on the same page with you. I like the fasted morning workouts. I like not having food in my stomach. I like what seems to me to be better body fat percentage and better body composition from a morning fasted workout. For like a hard gainer or somebody who's wanting to like pile on muscle or somebody who might have, you know, issues with like metabolic efficiency or something along those lines, like taking like an acaloric or a non-caloric pre-workout when you're in that fasted state, like a bottle of liquid ketones or like, you know, some amino acids or something like that.
Yeah.
It can kind of sort of help, but I like to just go in with, you know, my morning glass of water and a cup of coffee.
Yeah. You're not optimizing for anabolism when you work out fasted. There's no doubt about that, but there are probably other benefits. I don't know, just fasting, the increase in beta oxidation, you know, just fat burning.
The post-fasted exercise rise in growth hormone and testosterone also.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Increase in, I don't know. I mean, I don't know to what degree you can measure this or even if it's like significant, but the autophagy, you know, that sort of AMPK activation with the morning fasted workout, that metabolic workout, I think is important. But you're not necessarily optimizing for anabolism and performance when you do that.
No. And if we were talking to athletes and this was a sports performance podcast, this would be a whole different discussion about pre-workout. Like that's when that comes in handy.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, a lot of the nutrition advice the layperson receives is trickle down from the bodybuilding industry or from the pro athlete industry where you're burping up your pre-workout
workout bar while you're, you know, downing your post-workout shake from a 40-minute bout on the elliptical trainer, and you've got 1,200 calories down the hatch by 9 a.m., and, you know, you're really not developing any amount of metabolic efficiency at all.
There you go. So the long sort of, to wrap up the story, I started boxing, which is very different from resistance training, which was my primary exercise modality. And I found that I was a lot quicker to bonk in that fasted sort of high intensity glycolytic sort of exercising without having some food in my stomach. And I started just eating I would have like a banana with some like Baruca nut butter on it and like a protein shake beforehand. And I really felt like a significant increase in my power output.
Well, you were working out completely fast before, right? So just do a black coffee and go work out.
Pretty much like a black coffee.
You're saying cortisol city right before.
Yeah. So what you've found, like a recent nutrition habit you've adopted, is actually doing pre-workout fueling for a morning high-intensity workout, and you found it to be better that way.
And I don't necessarily need that for resistance training, for weight training, but for boxing, which is like 3-minute rounds with 30-second intervals, and you're doing that for 45 minutes.
Highly glycolytic.
Highly glycolytic. Yeah, you need something in the tank.
You need something else.
Yep. Yeah.
Or else you're going to be super flat. Catabolism is going to set in real quick. You're going to feel like...
Yeah,
exactly. Just a string bean.
A string bean. Yeah, 100%.
And that's not a fun feeling. No. I hate that feeling. I like to feel like dense at the gym. Like, that's why I mean, I don't mean to cut you off, but I feel like that's like your nutrition...
That's my most recent
pre-workout kind of thing.
You kind of killed two birds with one stone there and gave your recent exercise hack.
Yeah, I know. I thought you were going to go exercise. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, it's not a hack. It's, I guess, a new routine.
Boxing, but like I'm similar in a way where I like to have that empty stomach before I work out. But I wake up so early, but I don't love to train right away.
What's early?
5:30 and 6 sometimes, you know, 7 latest. Like, I can't sleep in past 7. It's crazy if I actually get past 7. But I like to have my coffee too. I bulletproof it a bit because I like to put, I have a pretty sensitive stomach, so I kind of buffer
it.
You
bulletproof TM it.
TM. Yeah, yeah.
Trademark. You got to say TM after bulletproof.
True. But I put like protein. I'll throw a protein source in there, usually like a whey isolate or something, like maybe collagen. My fats, and then I do like all sorts of stuff with it. Like, I'll do like lion's mane, and then I'll take an ashwagandha with it, with like L-theanine and some stuff to really make myself feel balanced with that coffee. And that lasts me 2-2.5 hours before I actually go work out. And then I make my pre-workout drink, which is like something that you were talking about before, because I'm kind of a hard gainer, but I don't love to work out with like a big, I would never have like eggs and hash browns and go work out. I would feel like shit. So I do a drink that has like Kian aminos with like chlorophyll and cordyceps and astragalus, schizandra. Like, I put a bunch of adaptogenic herbs in there with like amino acids, creatine. I've been adding, I think you were using it before. I actually caught on to it from you. Pre-workout, like carb powder.
Oh, like a slow-release starch?
It's a starch.
Is that like Yucan super starch, that type
of thing? Kind of like Yucan, but this one, the Yucan kind of made me gassy.
Oh, me too. Yeah. So much fermentation and bloating.
So much fermentation. Yeah. This one doesn't. This is like a...
is it the Vitargo?
Yes.
Vitargo. Yeah, so Vitargo is good. It's a little bit higher glycemic index, but... It seems to give a nice, slow, stable release of energy. I think it's a potato-based chain, and so it doesn't create the same fermentation as a super-duper long chain.
Right.
You can. I don't know how many hundreds of dextrose molecules it is or how they actually create that,
burns easy. I get a great pump at the gym. I feel great. My stomach feels good. I don't feel like I really ate much. And then I have like that post-workout window where I do some type of simple sugar, whether it's raw honey or coconut water, with my protein source, glutamine, glycine, get that like anabolic response right after my workout.
Yeah.
And that kind of sets me up for my day where I've gotten like that training in. It's kind of one of those things where I'm doing just a tiny bit each day, but I feel like I'm getting results every day.
That's what I do is I've given myself permission to actually like go to the well in terms of like a hard workout for about 30 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes that's in the morning. Sometimes it's in the evening. I don't structure it based purely on exercise physiology science, so to speak, or nutritional science or circadian rhythmicity as much as me waking up and being like, oh, I'm going to have a ton of decision-making fatigue by like 6 p.m. today based on looking at today's calendar. I'm going to go ahead and do that hard thing first and then go for a walk this afternoon or evening once I've finished work. Or if it's a pretty easy morning, I'll go for a walk and then wait, as you kind of alluded to, Max, until like body temp peaks and testosterone peaks and grip strength peaks, you know, sometime between like 4 and 6 p.m. and do the hard workout then. But for me, it's like a half hour and I can build consistently, and I do that nearly every day. Like, yeah. I have very few days off, but I just do something hard, you know, whether it's kettlebells or HIIT cardio or BFR training or whatever for about a half hour. And then anything else is just bonus, you know, walking during the day.
I've been using the bands too. I just got those bands.
Yeah, I used them this morning. And I mean, well, I guess
you got to get the bands, Max.
Yeah, this kind of leads into, I guess, like, awesome, like an exercise hack. So I'll derail us from nutrition for just a moment, but I'll tell you guys something new I've been doing. But I used those BFR bands this morning.
Yeah.
I use those things. I do some form of blood flow restriction training now, probably like 5 times a week.
Wow.
Because I have one of those.
Do you do the legs?
One of those
too?
Vasper machines. And I hit that thing like 2 or 3 times a week. And that's it's like the full body exercise machine, almost like an elliptical trainer with the arms, but it has cuffs that circulate cold water in them.
Jeez.
So you're getting a bunch of lactic acid buildup from the blood flow restriction, but the cold reduces the discomfort from that and also gives you some of that cold thermogenesis, extra calorie burning effect while you're on it. It's a 21-minute workout, but that's more of like a machine that you got to get on and get hooked up to and everything. But those bands, I mean, I travel everywhere with them. I put them on, you know, this morning. It was a half hour of squats, push-ups, and pull-ups. They basically limit some amount of arterial blood flow while still allowing for venous return back to the heart to a certain extent. So you're not fully occluding blood flow or cutting it off completely. But what happens is blood pools and metabolic byproducts from exercising pool in the muscle. And so when you get all that lactic acid building up, the growth in mitochondria and muscle fibers is induced by the muscles being almost tricked into thinking they're lifting something heavy. But the beauty of it is the joints are not under stress, nor is there an appreciable amount of inflammation produced, right? It's a different signaling mechanism. It's a lactic acid-based signaling mechanism rather than a whole bunch of inflammation. So you recover. I mean, you could do this twice a day or every day if you wanted to. You recover more quickly. You build muscle even if you don't have access to a lot of weights or anything like that. And it's portable, right? I can throw these in my bag and they weigh like half a pound for the arm straps and leg straps. And that's, I mean,
and it's all about
a ton of that
high rep, right?
Right.
Like, you don't necessarily need to be lifting anything heavy when you're doing it.
And because they also increase your heart rate and produce a little bit more of a cardiovascular load just because you have all that lactic acid built up, sometimes I'll finish a workout like that. And if I got a couple of phone calls I need to make in the morning or something, I'll leave the straps on after I finish that workout with the muscles all pumped, go for a walk. Hmm. And a walk becomes a lot more of a cardiovascularly demanding workout when you're wearing these bands. Walk for a half hour while I'm making phone calls and stuff and get a little bit of extra benefit, just because it probably takes like 4 minutes to put the bands on. So I'm going to spend that time, you know, putting everything on. You know, for me, I'm just all about time hacking. So I might as well make a walk afterwards, a little bit more of a stimulus metabolically.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've been wanting to try that, but I just haven't, you know. I've seen it come up on a number of people's Instagrams that I follow and respect. I feel like I've seen Bill Campbell, who's a
Luke has some. Luke Cook has some.
Yeah, they're not going to turn you into a super athlete. If anything, you're restricted in terms of your functional movement patterns because, honestly, like, you're kind of gritting your teeth. You got a lot of lactic acid built up in your appendages. But if your goal is just pure, like, portable muscle building and a lot of metabolic stimuli in a short period of time, like, they work remarkably well. And so, you know, I've been doing a lot of that. I guess to close the loop on nutrition, probably the number one thing I've thrown in is hunting down a lot of, like, ingredients, not a lot, but a few staple ingredients that I use throughout the day that are incredibly satiating to me, but very low in calories, right? Because I like to eat, but, you know, because I'm eating usually 3 square meals a day, I'm like a breakfast, lunch, dinner guy. I'm kind of selective in what I put on the plate just because I'm aware of my overall calorie load by the end of the day. So I use a ton of those, you know, like those Kanten noodles or the Japanese yam noodles that are zero carbs, zero cat. So I can have like a giant plate of quote, pasta, unquote, with lunch, and put a little bit of marinara or a little bit of the Primal Kitchen sauces on there, and it's got no calories but a ton of bulk in the stomach, right? Without the bloating or the fiber effect, you know, in terms of gas production, those are incredible. I have a serving of those almost every day.
I also do now, like a lot of times for smoothies, I'd put in avocados or coconut milk or something to cream it up or thicken it up. And what I found is a sea moss gel. I think it was Drew Canoli who introduced me to this stuff.
Irish moss?
Yeah, it's like Irish moss or sea moss. Yeah. I've been using a company called Akasha. Put a couple tablespoons of that in a smoothie. I get the same thickness, the same creaminess. It's basically like the Kanten noodles, zero calories, so full-on cheat. But it works amazingly if you're trying to kind of like cut calories here and there. And then the last one that I use is, I order this like by the caseload from Amazon, this organic pumpkin puree, like what you'd use for making pumpkin pie or whatever. But again, super low in calories, digests incredibly easily. It's like this BPA-free can organic pumpkin puree. And I'll have like a couple spoonfuls of that, like in the smoothie or with lunch, or I'll dip my steak in it at dinner and sometimes put a little salt, a little hot sauce in there, you know, or if you want a little cinnamon or a little pumpkin pie spice, a little bit of raw honey or whatever. But this pumpkin mash, like I use that and the sea moss gel and the noodles now almost every day. And I'm super satiated, but really my calorie load is not that significant with those food groups.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You got to check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. It contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again, by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and your yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life, you don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. Just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry. Throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis or sweating or doing hot yoga or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order.
I appreciate being able to have a discussion and talk about calories, because calories are this like contentious thing where, you know, I feel like you have some people in the nutrition space implying somehow, whether it's by way of promoting the ketogenic diet or other dietary patterns, that calories somehow don't matter. But I think it's important for people to recognize that they do matter. And what you're talking about, you know, calorie density, for somebody to understand how to identify a calorie dense versus a calorie, we'll say sparse food, the difference between those two, that's one of the greatest life and body composition hacks a person can have, right? I post about this stuff all the time on my Instagram. And these are some of these kinds of posts that I do are like among the most popular ones that I share, because visually, like, you can eat one single fast food meal that has as many calories as an entire day's worth of eating higher, you know, lower calorie density, higher volume foods. And volume eating is basically what that's called, is something that we should all be able to do. You know, it's just very few of us really know how to identify.
That are the subtle nuances, like we were talking about earlier with sugar alcohols, right? Those can be satiating. They can be a good low-calorie substitute, but there are certain low-calorie substitutes that can create some amount of fermentation and bloating, and others that just create bulk without the fermentation, like the Japanese yam noodle, right? It's a non-fermentable source of insoluble fiber, and so
you just feel that really full.
It just fills you up, but you're not farting. So yeah, I've been doing that. And I guess for the exercise, the BFR bands, I guess Max is boxing and a pre-workout meal. And then do you have any favorite new exercise
hack wise,
Crosby?
You know, I've been doing a lot of isolation.
Crosby's having a lot of sex.
Like, well, yeah, a lot of intercourse.
Yeah, that's sacred spiritual exercise.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
This is like, it's like the healthiest thing you could be doing in life right now, especially right now, right COVID now. And everything.
Yeah.
If you have a partner
yeah.
and you're in love with someone, like, you're in a good place right now with everything else going on. I mean, if you can afford to live a decent life and eat good food and get good sun and be in a place where you like where you live and you have an amazing partner, like, everything else is not as stressful, right?
Now, are we talking about, okay, so like...
I was about to talk about something else with this guy.
Oh, no, sex works.
Sex that is can great. Be exercise. No, we can keep, we can go back to sex.
Yeah, Jamie Wheel just wrote that book, Recapture the Rapture, and I interviewed him a few months ago before the book was released, because he's very into this so-called like hedonic matrix of sex. Mm. And in the podcast, we got into this, everything from like nitric oxide whippets to microdoses with LSA, to certain soundtracks, to tantric breathwork, to all these things that turn sex into, you know, arguably more spiritual and sacred and meaningful activity, but also a little bit more of like a marathon-esque type of bout. So when you say more sex, are you saying like hours upon hours? Are you just saying more just like normal quick sex in general?
Or? No, I think somewhere in between. Yeah. Definitely somewhere in between. I think that like there's the hours and hours kind of situation. She works a lot. Like I'm in a place where I'm trying to build a business. Like we're not devoting our whole life and days to sex. But yeah, I think that there's calorie wise burning. There's something to be said when you're having a lot of sex.
Well, with sex, you can
13 calories a minute. So you're getting like 26 calories.
Yeah, but sex is one of the few activities that can be less, right? It can be like low intensity, steady state, or it can go all the way up to like HIIT, you know, like
for sure.
I mean, literally, it could be super high intensity.
Yeah,
so it actually is an amazing exercise.
It is
if you're lucky enough to.
And I like both. I mean, like, so we plan typically once a month, like either a staycation where the kids go off to a friend's house, and then my wife and I just get out of the bedroom and go out to like the guest house or a different bedroom of the house just to make it a little bit more novel, or get a local hotel, right? Go out to a restaurant, washer, dryer, kitchen, you name it, if the kids are gone. But we'll go out to a local hotel and do more of that like Jamie Wheel-esque type of experience where we'll literally like take plant medicines and have a carefully selected soundtrack and do like,
that's amazing, you
know, four rounds of Wim Hof before we even start making out. And, you know, just all these things to really tweak our physiologies. But that's not an every night type of thing, especially for busy working parents.
Do a full-on biohack before the sex.
Right, exactly. But, you know, we also, as you were just alluding to, Matt, with like the low-intensity steady-state sex versus the high-intensity interval sex, I don't know if you guys have found this, but sometimes, like, no music, super quiet, like the, you know, this would be like the best way I could describe it would be like if you're having sex at her parents' house type of scenario where it's just like super quiet and you're trying not to make the bed creak or the floorboards creak or anything, but it's still like kind of special and silent and meaningful and eye gazing and low intensity. And then there's like turn on the music and just like, you know, pound for, you know, 10, 15 minutes and get a sweat on. Yeah. Front planking.
Great core. I mean, I don't do any abs. I don't do any ab workouts. I mean, I do plank. You know,
you probably do like deadlifts planking and things like that.
Yeah, everything. Stability. Exactly. Anything that I'm actually using my core to stabilize for other workouts. But you'll never see me at the gym doing like crunches or anything like that. I've always had a sensitive stomach, and I had a psoas injury in football. Never really fully recovered. I actually hit you up recently about, I don't know, within the last year about BPC 157.
Oh, BPC 157, yeah.
Because I was like, I just need to start healing my body in places that I'm avoiding doing things. And that's one of those things that I've kind of avoided for a long time are those intense core workouts, because it triggers an inflammatory response right away in me. And especially leg lifts, because I'm using that psoas muscle so much.
That's great. I have the same thing. I had a hernia that I got during my Ironman racing days. And I still can't do like hanging leg raises or anything like that that produce a really, really high load on the particularly the rectus abdominis. Like, I just have to avoid those. And, you know, I've thought about going in for a repair or something like that.
Right.
But
did you, because you did some BPC 157.
Not there, but yeah, I've used like
pretty much all
injectable BPC 157 for injuries, you know, incredibly successfully. You know, typically stacked with another peptide called TB500.
Right.
And now there's a newer one. It's not newer, but it's indicated quite a bit now for inflammatory conditions, for tendon repair, et cetera, called GHK copper peptide.
Which I've heard of that.
Common peptide in the beauty industry, like for hair and skin growth or beauty. But they're all injectable. And furthermore, they are specific amino acid sequences that one by one the FDA is restricting and making illegal or making it unable to access in the United States. So I'm not even sure how long peptides will be available to the general mass market. There are some doctors I know who literally are setting up all their peptides internationally, and then when a patient needs them, they get shipped from an international locale. Like, that's the only workaround. Yeah.
Because they work so well to heal the body.
Yep, exactly.
They need us sick.
Yeah. Yep. Now, what about like technologies, like biohacks, you know, because people talk about red lights and saunas and
cryotherapy chambers. I try to do the Juve.
Like wearables or devices or things that are like go-tos in your guys' routines now?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say the most radical transformation for me has been to my sleep with using some of these tools. I recently went through my bedroom, my bathroom, my upstairs area, which is where I spend most of my time in the hour, you know, prior to going to bed. And I've replaced all the light bulbs with red light bulbs. So now when you go up there and you put, well, first of all, I have like these red night lights.
So it looks like a nightclub upstairs.
It kind of does look like a nightclub upstairs, but the red is very soothing. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have any of the blue, you know, wavelengths of light that would otherwise disrupt your circadian tendency to want to wind down and you know, release melatonin, obviously, and get you prepared for bed. So I have that. And then I have developed this sleep routine that
the mouth taping.
I think it's not just the mouth taping, because mouth taping is fairly common, but what I've become kind of obsessed with are nasal strips, which to me are kind of revolutionary. And I haven't seen anybody else talking about this. I'm sure that you have, but I go to just my local drugstore and I buy the generic. I mean, I guess there's like the most well-known brand are Breathe Right strips, but I actually don't like those. I like the generic drugstore extra strength brand of nasal strips. And what they do is they expand your nasal airways. And for me, it makes it so much easier to So I put those on, and then I tape my mouth at night, and it has radically... I was already a good sleeper, but it's made my sleep even better.
Yeah.
And I have no affiliation with any of these companies, but it really does help. And, you know, one of the benefits of that, theoretically, increasing, you know, airflow through your paranasal sinus is going to increase nitric oxide.
Exactly.
And improve, you know, enhance recovery, cardiovascular health.
Humidifies the air, oxygenates the air.
Yeah.
Interesting rabbit hole, but the nasal passages are one of the few tissues in the body that contain erectile tissue, pretty much similar to that of the clitoris and the penis.
Really?
And so it can expand and contract. You know how, like, if you've been, you know, talking about having sex a lot, if you've been having sex a lot, like, your dick's bigger. It just, you notice that during the day. Like, it seems to have more blood flow to it and almost, you know, more nitric oxide production, you know, et cetera. But by engaging in nasal breathing during exercise, during your walks, you know, such as a guy like Patrick McCowan might talk about, or this whole process of Buteyko breathing, you can actually train your nasal passages to become more elastic, to have more blood flow, in the same way that you can almost train your genitals to do so.
Wow.
But using those breathe right strips is kind of like, it's not a workaround, but it's a way to amplify that effect even more. You know, ideally it's paired with nasal breathing during your workouts or during your walks, but that's something I also hear repetitively. I have done the breath right strips. The mouth taping, I find, seems to significantly inhibit the quality of my wife's and my nighttime pillow talk and prayer time.
Because we
literally just like talk each other to sleep or pray each other to sleep at night. And so when I wear that mouth tape, it's like, you sound like Kenny from South Park or whatever. But the other interesting thing, by the way, Max, is I'm glad you brought that up about the red incandescent lights, because a lot of people will say, well, I've got blue light blockers. I don't need to change out the lights in my bedroom. But because you have photoreceptors on your entire body, right, the idea of just having your retinal photoreceptors blocking blue light, but the entire rest of your skin exposed to blue light when you get up to go to the bathroom at night, or when you're sitting in bed reading at night, or when you're preparing your bedroom for sleep, it technically is going to impact your circadian rhythmicity. So that idea of actually replacing all the cans in your like master bedroom and master bathroom with red, or even arguably, because it's the closest to the nighttime like sunset spectrum, red incandescent, it's actually a really, really smart move, even if you have blue light blocking glasses.
Yeah, I'm not sure the degree to which your peripheral photoreceptors interface with your suprachiasmatic nucleus. But yeah, I mean, obviously we now know that you have photoreceptors throughout your body in the periphery. But just in terms of like my sleep, those lights have made a big difference. And then finally, I'll just say, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with white noise, but what many people are not as familiar with is brown noise. So knowing the difference, brown noise has been another one of those, like, you know, really significant up leveling right. of my
slightly
sleep.
Different frequency than white.
Yeah. If you're listening to like white noise to go to sleep, definitely try brown noise. It's way more soothing.
Unless your deep sleep is low. Like if your percentage of deep sleep is low, it's actually pink noise.
Which is right in the middle, right?
It's like right in the middle, yeah. And then brown noise, I guess, is like the balance between REM and non-REM. But for me, like I struggled for a long time with, you know, checking on my ring in the morning, my deep sleep percentages, and I switched to pink noise. I use this app called Sleepstream.
Okay.
And, you know, it plays meditation tracks and all sorts of ambient noise. All I use is the noise on it, but I use pink noise. And for me, that works really well. Brown noise is also good. I think white noise is probably the least effective.
I think I need some pink noise too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like that might be key for me. I actually do well on like 6 hours, 6-7 hours of sleep a night. Like I don't sleep a lot. Like probably like 11 to 5:30, 11 to 6.
Yeah. Do you nap though, or meditate in at any point during the day?
Well, I was meditating for a bit, but I haven't been in a while. But I don't nap either. Like I don't. Yeah. I have energy throughout the day. I can get all my work done throughout the day. But it's funny because I used to have to take a nap in the middle of the day. But ever since one big nutrition hack that I was going to bring up that I forgot to earlier was ever since I've kind of been very aware of my fats and the oils that I'm putting in my body. I used to eat a ton of polyunsaturated fat that was cooked, a ton, not even knowing, like going to Air One all the time and getting like the vegetables, but they're all in grapeseed oil, thinking, oh, I'm eating like super low carb. I'm going to have my broccoli and, you know, brisket, and everything is like cooked in these bad oils. Right. So I really started to become aware of, you know, it's like more of like a PUFA awareness, but that omega-6 kind of ratio. And that changed my energy levels completely. Like implementing a little bit more vitamin E in my diet, also getting rid of all those polyunsaturated fats, eating more saturated fat, more of those stable fats that gave me that energy, along with good sources of proteins, and then adding carbs back in my diet too. I was low carb for a minute. And then as soon as I started doing like clean ones, like I don't eat really any grains besides white rice. And then I love potatoes, roots and fruits basically. And then honey, maple syrup, just changing that a little bit and having them at the right time, spiking my insulin at the right opportune times when my insulin sensitivity is high, like post-workout, it's completely changed my body composition. Mm. I like gained way more lean muscle. My fat percentage went down, all from like boosting my carbs.
You sound a lot like, have you guys heard of like, the kind of like the anti-aging, author and I don't know if he's a scientist. Ray Pete, Georgie Dinkoff. Those would be two of the primary figures in like the community that's also would probably be a community that a guy like Matt Blackburn, who we were talking about earlier, is a member of, where they're all about low PUFAs. They're all about actually weaving in sugar and carbohydrates pretty extensively. And then kind of like a third piece of that puzzle is they're really into pregnenolone, progesterone, and DHEA supplementation, like especially for men who want to, well, for women to a certain extent too, but those are things that a lot of times you would see more recommended to females, but they're actually big on that as well. And there's a lot of people in that community who claim that like their energy levels are through the roof by doing a lot of what you've done, eliminating PUFAs, not being carb phobic. And then they're also throwing in some hormonal support.
Yeah.
I've kind of had my eyes kept on that crowd just cause they're doing some different things that I think are
interesting. It's different. There's some things that I still won't do. Like I've researched a lot of repeat stuff and I have some people in that community that I conversate with a little bit. There's actually a really cool, PUFA free skincare line by this lady called Cosma Beauty that I've been kind of talking to her a bit and got some of her products, all amazing stuff. But the one thing, it's that extra sugar thing that I won't do. Like I won't do the refined sugar. I'm not going to put table sugar in my food. Like I don't necessarily love orange juice. I'm not going to, that's not a thing for me, but like with anything else, like stuff that I've learned from you, stuff that I've learned from Max, stuff that I've learned from Ray Pete and even Matt Blackburn, some of these people, like I take little bits of each and I put it into my tailored plan for Crosby Taylor that works for me and my lifestyle and how much I'm working out. Because when I went and got blood work recently, you know, everything was great and my levels were high but the one thing that he said was you could even have like higher testosterone, but it seems like your problem might be under eating for the amount of training that you're doing. And so up your calories, up this, up that. And I was already eating a good amount. And I was like, well, how am I going to eat more? Because my stomach's sensitive. It's not like I can just gorge myself post-workout. Mm-hmm. Probably like shit myself if I did that. Mm-hmm. So just finding time to like add in more calories. For me, it's like trying to get more calories. Like you were talking about getting bulkier things to have your calorie content be lower. For me, I've been trying to figure out ways. Like sometimes I'll just crush a third of a pint of Strauss organic ice cream at night. Mm-hmm. Just to get those calories.
Yeah.
And
you're bringing me back to my bodybuilding days.
and sometimes I feel like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I'm back in football.
You just couldn't eat enough.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I'm back in football by the way that I'm training and how balanced my hormones feel right now. It's that metabolic place where I'm like, if I eat sugar, I burn them right away. Mm-hmm. Nothing's sitting around, nothing's storing as fat. And I feel very grateful of that, but I know it's not a forever thing, so I'm trying to find the balance with all of it. It's been a fun process. I mean, me and my girlfriend like joke around about it all the time, just like avoiding the PUFAs in certain ways. But
yeah, I wish I had known back when I was trying to shove calories down the hatch all day long about things like, you know, liver and bone broth and, you know, and some of these wonderful fats like lard and suet that at the time I vilified, but would have been such great energy sources.
Amazing.
For me.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I could go back and do it over again, I think I'd do a lot less of the man in a can protein shakes and, you know, pre-workouts. But I guess for me, from like a hacking or a technology or standpoint, I've been messing around a lot with these devices that can induce certain brainwave states or simulate what like supplements or medications might do for the body, but using technology instead. Like, and I've done interviews about this in the past. Like there's this one device called Apollo.
Oh yeah. The Apollo Neuro.
Yeah. It produces like this inaudible sound wave and you select from the app, like relax or sleep or social or Focus or whatever, but it operates based on the principle of the sound wave traveling up the long bone of your femur. If you wear it on your wrist, the long bones in your arm, and it induces like a brainwave response, like alpha or beta or theta or delta, you know, different sequences depending on the sound frequency being used. And it actually seems to work remarkably well.
Funny. The science is super interesting. And it's a coincidence that you bring it up. This week, Dave Rabin, who created it, is on my podcast. And
oh, cool.
They sent me a device, and I've been checking it out. It is super interesting. And I think especially in light of like the fact that so many people today are struggling with, you know, chronic stress, anxiety, right.
Or even like a deleterious gut response to a cup of coffee, but they want that same kind of like beta brainwave release, you know, whatever, in the morning or when they need to wake me up. They could do it without actually consuming a substance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. So you found it to be helpful?
I've messed around with a few different devices. I've found that one to be helpful. That's a keeper for me. There are two others I'm experimenting with right now that I'm getting really good results with. One is called a HAPB. I'm not an investor in any of these companies or anything like that. This one's called a HAPB, and it is based on magnetic frequency technology, almost like transdirect cranial stimulation. But what they've figured out how to do is simulate the same frequency that basically would match that of, say, like caffeine or nicotine or MDMA or CBD or anything, you know, kind of similar to the Apollo. The app can allow you to select from which signals that you want. But unlike the Apollo, it's based on magnetic frequencies. And so you feel a little bit different. Feels almost like more powerful than the Apollo. And you can feel it right away. Like there's one that simulates like the social lubricating effect of alcohol. And you wear that thing and you feel like you've had a couple glasses of wine. But again, you're not getting any of the acetaldehyde conversion. You're not getting the calories from drinking. You could arguably like go out to a party, have one cocktail, be wearing that and kind of like feel the effects of not necessarily being drunk, but having that nice social buzz. And so that's another one that I like. And then the last one, and this is kind of far out, but I interviewed this guy on my show as well. It's thing called an infopathy device. And it's based on the concept of homeopathy. You know, this idea that, you know, when you put certain medications or substances in water, the water can carry the imprint or the actual signature of that particular compound. And so for this one, you basically have a device, and usually it's like a disc that you place your water or your wine or your beverage on top of. Then you select that you want to infuse it with like resveratrol or sildenafil or just about anything that you would want. I mean, there's like thousands of different compounds that they've got on there. I'm even shipping them my stored stem cells so they can take the frequency of the stem cells, because I have like my 30-year-old stem cells stored. Just to see what would happen if I like drink in water the 30-year-old me equivalent of stem cells each day. And I realize that like there's not a ton of research behind this, but yet, and actually, I think it was Blackburn who was telling me about this. He's like, if you tried the sildenafil frequency, it actually works just like Viagra. And I tried it out a few times, and I'm pretty in touch with my body, and I don't think it was a placebo effect, but I swear, like, massive hard on every evening that I used it for way longer than that would normally stay with me by drinking sildenafil in like the later afternoon on a night where I knew my wife and I were going to get it on.
Are you actually ingesting sildenafil?
Well, you're ingesting the frequency, right? So you're not having to do like first pass metabolism or anything of the actual compound, but it's really interesting. And I feel like we need more research on these type of things that simulate what consumption of foods or supplements would do for the body. I'm never going to be a breatharian. I love food. I love supplements. No. I love my glass of wine. But I think it is cool that we're seeing more and more of these technologies that seem to like simulate what foods or supplements or meds could do for you.
Huh.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I started using the company SomaVedic. They sent me one of those things. You have one of those too, right?
Yeah.
It was one of those. You just kind of have to trust that something's actually...
The research is either weak or biased. But yeah, for that one, it would be like blocking EMFs or introducing healthy frequencies into a room.
It's like harmonizing the space.
Yeah, it seems like one of those things shows up on my doorstep like every week. Some new pendant or EMF blocking device. And like, I got to be honest, most of them, I kind of feel something. But you just never know if it's actual placebo, unless you're actually taking a meter through your house and testing everything. which I've done, and I have to admit, most of the EMF analysis I've done with meters doesn't show any of those to have that significant of an effect. Yet physiologically, I see like higher HRV and better sleep. And
I think that's kind of what their whole shtick is like, it's not really changing that EMF. It's not blocking it. It's actually creating an environment that your cellular frequencies can actually harmonize with the EMF and not have negative side effects from whatever it is that you would have side effects from the EMF. So, I mean, because I swear they just put the smaller type box 5G panels catty corner from my apartment. Not the big one, but like the tiny little like square panels. And there's four of them, one on each side of the pole. And when that went up, I was like, all right, I got to figure something out. That thing's going to fry that corner.
We did buy a Faraday canopy for our bed. My wife was resistant to it for the longest time. And I actually had to show her like the design, and it's actually beautiful. It's like a four poster. Like I finally get to have my princess bed, you know, with like the curtains and the four posts. But it's a Faraday cage. It just blocks out everything.
Wow.
And I mean, those things feel like just like a peaceful cave when you crawl.
Really?
Do you know Luke's story? I'm sure he's a mutual friend.
Luke's really into all that.
He apparently there's a, what from what I gather from his Instagram. So he just moved to Austin and there's a paint that you can use that blocks.
Yeah, it's EMS. A Faraday paint.
It's a Faraday paint. So he painted his bedroom black, right?
Yeah.
But obviously, that would make the room way too dark and
dreary. Yeah. He painted over it?
Draconian. He painted over it with white. But yeah,
it's all... But he's got that paneled black in there.
Below the white paint.
Freaking expensive.
Is it?
I got an EMF analysis of my house.
He's
got
to be crushing it because he's building like a dream house.
For me to do a paint job on my house was like $28,000. Like to actually paint all the rooms that I cared about that had like the higher levels of EMF from cell. And I live out in the middle of nowhere, right? Where are you at again? I'm up in Spokane, Washington. Okay. But there's still, you know, when we went through the house and tested, there were radio signals coming in and cell phone towers we were getting signals from and some of the wiring in the house. And so arguably I might benefit from doing it, but I have difficulty justifying the expense of a whole house painting versus just, let's say, a Faraday canopy around the one section of the house where you're spending a third of your life wanting to be in a, like a resting and restorative phase. Mm. So that's kind of the path I've taken.
We, during the pandemic, me and my girlfriend did a road trip up to Canada, because that's where she's from. She's from Calgary. We went up the West Coast, and one of the places we stopped and got a hotel was Spokane.
Oh, yeah.
It's cool beautiful town. There.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did like a bike ride through Gonzaga and Washington State, right?
Yeah.
And there's like a really cool health market up on the hill. What's that one called? You know which one I'm talking about. It's
close. Up on a hill. On South Hill.
It's up right up from the city, like downtown. Because we stayed kind of downtown-ish.
I may not know the one that you're talking about, but I don't want to make Spokane sound too good because I don't want people moving there, like what happened to Austin. But it is like it's like a cheap Boulder.
Wow, it's pretty nice. Yeah. We weren't mad at it at all. Like we were looking around and it was like a nice like fall time. You see the leaves falling and stuff. It was pretty beautiful and the nice weather.
Well, that's a good segue into something I wanted to ask you guys about as well, which was like relationship or community building or anything you've done when it comes to like your social life, your relationships, or community. And the reason that Spokane made me think of that was during the pandemic and the lockdown, I wound up traveling way, way less. I'm still traveling way, way less than I did before when I was on a plane once or twice a week.
Yeah.
And I really developed a desire to be a member of my local community on a greater level.
That's cool.
Unfortunately, that desire was generated during a time when everything's locked down. It's not like you're going to be going out to restaurants and like doing much, but we started to have like dinner parties where it was just like, anybody can come, wear a mask or don't wear a mask, whatever you're comfortable with. We're going to do a huge like cook up of meat. And, you know, sometimes it'll be like my kid's jiu-jitsu instructor and a couple coaches from the local community and a few athletes. Sometimes it's a bunch of biohackers. Sometimes it's friends from church. Sometimes it's a few families, but we, at the beginning of each month now, I map out two specific days to have like a big dinner party. And it's been amazing just because you get all these people together. They form new relationships. All our dinner parties like start with sauna and cold pool. and, you know, like a cocktail bar, and, you know, then it generates into like a massive dinner gathered around the great table or outdoors. And then we always do like singing and like group music. Everybody will like grab a drum or guitar, whatever they feel like, and play
Where's
music
my
afterwards.
Invite?
Well, come on.
Oh man. I'm going to take a quick flight.
But yeah, that idea of making your home like a gathering place for people. Best. And planning it out, and actually, so I have a master list, like a Google Doc, where I've got like 30 different names. It grows every month of people in town with a quick description written after of who they are. And I'll just sit down at the beginning of the month. It's like making a recipe. It's like, okay, I want this person, that couple, and this family. And we're going to mix and match and see what happens. And then you just have everybody over, and it's a blast.
That's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I definitely value that. One of the reasons why I moved into this place, my house, is because it lends itself to having people over. And I think that's one of the great joys in life is, you know, building and fostering, you know, your social circle. And there's no better way to do that than, I think, to cook with people and to break bread. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's been something that people have bonded over food. People have bonded over food for millennia. Mm-hmm. And to think that somehow now we can just subjugate that. And be okay with it, and not suffer any kind of repercussions, I think is completely naive.
Yeah. And bonding over food, I think, and by the way, I never thought I'd hear you say breaking bread. Bonding over food, I think
bread.
It is something that becomes a bit, like diet agnostic. You know, when you say, hey, everybody, I'm going to whatever grill salmon burgers, everybody bring a healthy side to share. You obviously have a wide variety of foods that might fall outside the dietary context that you've been following. But, I mean, there's something about, and this might sound kind of woo, but, like, letting it go and, like, having whatever, you know, Aunt Matilda's cookies with your whatever, the jiu-jitsu instructor's yogurt parfait with blueberries and granola and, you know, and a giant helping of, you know, your neighbor's sweet potato mash and then whatever, the salmon burger you grilled up. Like when you're gathering with people and just enjoying the food in that, you know, arguably highly kind of like parasympathetic scenario where
the chemistry.
You're just laughing with people and you're super relaxed. I feel like foods that would normally kind of mess with me a little bit, like they don't as much in that scenario, which is super interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's that valve, right? That valve that doesn't shut
from
the cortisol response.
Yeah.
So it's nice.
That's
and
a good point.
Open and you're having fun and you're not thinking about it and you just crush something that has a bunch of gluten in it. Because you're laughing and you just maybe sang a song and nothing happens. But if you know it's got gluten in it, you sit down and you're already premeditating the stress response from it and you start eating it, that valve's going to shut super fast. And all of a sudden, you're in digestive stress.
It's the same reason. I think like praying over a meal, like I think there's more than just like being grateful for what you're about to consume and blessing it to your body. I think you're actually generating in a state of prayer or gratitude positive frequencies that affect not only your body but also the food. I mean, I think that eating in that state, praying, you know, settling yourself down, doing some breath work or some meditation prior to a big meal, I definitely think it affects both you and the food.
Agreed.
Agreed. Going around the table, I mean, that's a good sort of activity for your next dinner party or even just like dinner with the family is to go around the table and express a bit of gratitude, what you're grateful for. I'm a ardent meat eater, and I wouldn't call myself a carnivore by any stretch, but I definitely am an advocate for the consumption of animals. And I think it's really important, actually, to express gratitude for the lives that have been unwittingly sacrificed for our nourishment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every time I hunt, and now I take my boys hunting, we say a prayer, we return that animal to the earth, where it's a very sacred experience. And we do the same thing at our house, Max, when we have these big dinner parties, even with just our family at dinner, it always starts with breath work. Right, like a lot of nasal breath work. Usually we're pausing, we're in a moment of silence for 1 to 2 minutes with breath work. That's always followed by gratitude, like what are you grateful for today, or who are you grateful for, and then prayer. And then finally, you dig into the food, and having that type of habit and then carrying that type of habit into your solo meals, right? So for me now, you know, whatever, I just had like one of those bowls up at Sun Life for lunch, right? But I'm out there in that little outdoor veranda by Next Health and Sun Life. And now I pause before my meal when normally prior to adopting that habit with my family, I would have just dug right in. But that idea of, oh, hey, I'm about to eat, and this is actually pretty super special. Like, I have this amazing meal that, you know, 99% of the people on the face of this planet would kill for. And I've got my computer open and my phone on, and I'm distracted by this, and I'm listening to that, and just like plugging yourself into a state of awareness and gratitude and actually realizing what that does for you, for your meal, for your digestion. Like you were talking about Crosby, for even like that closure of the ileocecal valve in response to cortisol. I mean, it's pretty profound.
That's really cool. Yeah. Just to kind of build on that, we have been playing volleyball every weekend with a huge group. We go out to Will Rogers, and that's kind of been our big community building thing since the start of the pandemic. I think probably a couple of months in, once it settled a little bit and we could actually, and there was no lockdown, we just started playing like a lot. Like, she played in college, so she got me into it. I started getting pretty decent, and we're playing with like 30, 40 people.
Your girlfriend, Tessa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She played in college, and she's quite the athlete. So, and I played college football, so I have some athleticism, and we go out there all the time, and you know, everybody's slapping hands, being super positive. Nobody's in a mask out there. Everybody's just having fun, like enjoying life. And
yeah,
I think there's something to also be said about being in that space where, you know, you're having fun and you're not super stressed and creating kind of like almost like a placebo effect that you're going to get ill.
Mm-hmm.
You're just enjoying life and not really worrying about it and kind of letting your biochemistry do what it's supposed to be doing and getting all the different bacterias and
mm-hmm.
touching things and getting dirty and hugging people and exchanging all that
sweat
and increasing the resilience of your immune system.
Yeah.
And then you go home and eat good food. And on top of all that, I mean, we haven't had a sniffle this whole time. And it's not like, I'm not like trying to brag or anything. I just think there's something to be said for really having a faith in your body, mm-hmm. in like a sovereign body, and having that faith in your immune system.
There's papers right now floating around on the internet about the possibility of weakened immune systems in response to social isolation, or at least a less robust amount of physical contact based on, on COVID lockdowns. And I certainly think there's something to that, in the same way that, you know, kids who grow up on farms have more resilient immune systems just because of their exposure to poop and dirt and animals and germs. And
The news media weakens your immune system. I mean, chronically elevated cortisol, we know, makes you more prone to infections.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And so, like, the panic porn that pervades the media, and I'm not like a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but, you know, it's like watching the news is literally asking the TV what you should be worried about today.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally what it is. Like, turn it off.
No matter what channel. Yeah.
And that can, we know that can have downstream physiologic effects.
Yeah. But it's purposeful. I mean, if it bleeds, it leads. Like, that's what
bleeds, it leads.
That's what sells ads, and that's what gets viewers, is something that's sexy and attracts attention and makes people freak out. And that's the way news is built these days. I don't know. How do you guys get your news? Or do you?
You know, I mean, it's hard not to get it on Instagram if you're on it.
I scan Twitter. But I'm not like news obsessed. Like, all the news I need is like in my group chat with like me and my brothers and my, you know, as long as my family's doing all right, I'm like a family guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm realizing now in my third, you know, plus decade of life, like the stuff that matters most to me is the stuff that's happening in my immediate environment. You know, our brains didn't evolve to have a grasp over what's happening on a global scale at an exponential pace. You know, we evolved in an environment where our most pressing needs occurred locally.
Our village.
Yeah.
Yeah, our village.
And where 30 steps away equaled 30 steps away. Today, 30 steps away equals a billion, right? Because we live in the era of exponential technological growth. So I think that we're all suffering silently due to the fact that, you know, we each have taken it upon ourselves. And because in a way, we're each kind of told that we have to take it on ourselves, right? To be like these globally minded, you know, people concerned about.
It's irresponsible not to watch the news, bro.
Yeah. And I don't buy that for.
It's like not voting.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I think that we need to like return to that more sort of like localized vantage point about things.
For me, I mean, like, honestly, like, I've got a couple of podcasts that are quick news feeds that are just like, I mean, and they're still biased. I'm a freaking like libertarian Christian from North Idaho, right? And I have to admit, like, the couple of podcasts I listen to for the news, they are bent that way. Just like most news is going to have some amount of bias to it. But I just do a quick check-in. You know, I got a couple of podcasts that are like 15 minutes long. It's the new. There's one I listen to called Cross Politics. There's another guy who tends to be kind of controversial, a little bit of a lightning rod, named Charlie Kirk. I listen to his show sometimes just to take a deeper dive. Whatever, if Biden gives a speech, I'll go listen to their breakdown of it. And yeah, I will fully admit it's still biased, but for me, it's like a podcast. I can turn it on, turn it off, you know, do a quick listen at 3x speed or whatever, catch up on what I need to know for the day, and that's generally what I do. I guess if we could like cover one more topic in the time that we have left. What might be fun is, you know, inevitably when we record shows like this, there's just like something you thought of during the show or something you want to share you didn't get a chance to share yet, something you want to tell people, some cookie recipe message you want to get out to the world, Crosby or whatever. But if you guys could leave people with one piece of either deeply meaningful and spiritual advice or one super silly crazy thing that you've been up to that you just think is cool that people would dig knowing about.
Yeah, I'll start. I've been for a long time wanting to get therapy, just like interpersonal talk therapy. And today I actually had my first session with
therapist. Is it this podcast?
Really? It was this podcast, yeah.
Really?
No.
We actually gave Max a bunch of MDMA before.
There you go.
Full on MDMA talk therapy session.
No, I bring this up because I think it's important to normalize that therapy, there shouldn't be any stigma about it, that it doesn't make you weak to seek out a therapist. But sometimes we have things that like we want to sort of deal with and or get better at in life. And we're very quick to seek out experts in other regards, in regards that are unrelated to mental health. Like I wanted to learn boxing. I sought out a boxing trainer, right? I'm a musician. I sing and I play guitar. I have a singing teacher. There's no ego involved. I can say I take singing lessons and I really, really love it. But I had some unsettled, loose ends in regards to like previous relationships and like, you know, my upbringing and stuff that I wanted to sort of like unpack with a therapist. And so I sought out one and I did a little bit of due diligence. And I think it's important, you know, I'm somebody who, like you, Ben, probably like I have to before I make any decision, I research the shit out of it. Right. And I think that can make something like therapy very intimidating to begin. Like, I want to know that I'm getting the best therapist or whatever, or the therapist that's right for my particular needs, because I'm a unique snowflake and I have needs that are unlike anybody else's needs.
That guy
throughout all of human history. Right. But that's actually not necessarily the case or not necessarily productive or beneficial in the context of therapy. And so I think at a certain point, you just have to like pull the trigger and just like see some person and to start feeling things out in that regard. And so I was recommended somebody by a friend of mine who's a very smart woman, and she thought that this particular therapist could be of help to me. And so I don't know where it's going to go or how long I'm going to be seeing this person, but I just think it's like important, especially today, but for men in particular. You know, I think women tend to be more inclined to like be open about that sort of stuff. But yeah, there's now all these apps. I'm not using one of the apps, but there are these apps now that make it like very accessible for people with like all different kinds of budgets.
Yeah, I've heard about those. Although if you were super serious, man, you just like go down to Peru and do ayahuasca. That's true therapy.
That's what they say.
That's the sexy stuff that everybody's going to do now.
I'm a little bit reluctant to be totally honest.
I haven't done it.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends that do this plant medicine stuff, and I think it's okay to be afraid of plant or to be like reluctant to engage with plant medicines. I think like in our community, there people are like, yeah, this past weekend I did an ayahuasca ceremony.
Well, it opens like up a whole different portal.
Have a little right? more. We need to have a little more respect.
It changes
for those
the whole game for you.
Spiritual portal. You know, sometimes if you're in the wrong place from a neurotransmitter standpoint, there are issues there. Like. Yeah, there's a lot, you know, a lot more than we probably have time to go into on this show. But yeah, I mean, that's like a proceed with caution.
There you go.
A great deal of foresight and seriousness if you're going to do it. This is not a vacation to the Amazon where everything is fixed and you can be happy. Like, gosh, I mean, like I've seen videos of guys like finishing up an ayahuasca ceremony and just like being suit. Like one of my buddies had a friend who did it, and like he came out of the ceremony and sent a video to his family of him like cutting his dick off.
What?
Right. Yeah. Like that much of a messing with your awareness of self or your spiritual connection or even like influence from a spirit. Like you're opening up, like you said, Crosby, a different portal into a different spiritual world. It's not just like whatever, drinking an extra glass of wine.
No. Yeah. And it's not even like doing mushrooms either. It's a whole different ballgame.
Hallucinogenic purgative. And yeah.
Crazy. But
anyways, therapy. I like it. How about you, Crosby?
Therapy, yeah. You know, as of late, I've been really working on personally embracing more change for myself, because I'm a pretty strict, stringent kind of like routine guy. I have my routine in the morning. The control to feel as good as I want to feel every day is like a very big thing for me. I like that. I like to be able to grip that and say, like, if I do X, Y, and Z again tomorrow, I'm going to feel as good as I felt the day before. Just working on opening up more to other possibilities, being more spontaneous, even if it's going to push me back a couple notches, but being able to have that new life experience. Me and my girlfriend have actually been talking about, I've been in West Hollywood for 10 years. I've been in the same place for 10 plus years, and it's comfortable. I have my whereabouts that are my normal whereabouts that I've known for that long. And she's like, oh, let's move west. Let's move to the Marina. Let's do this or do that, or like even move out of LA. And those things are like terrifying to me at one point.
I feel that.
But also, just like I had moved from Northern California to Los Angeles, or from New York back to Los Angeles, there was a moment when I was like, oh man, I'm going to have to have this new environment. I've just been doing a lot of thinking lately on being able to embrace that and just being okay with like having a lifestyle change and pace that changes maybe my day to day a tiny bit, or I have to give up a little bit to get something new. And I think that is a big thing for me, and being able to switch that, being able to flip that switch for not only for myself, but also for business and financially. Like, I think that once you open up that next door, you know, I think that I'll be able to be a little bit more uncomfortable when it comes to making business decisions and take a little bit more risk and do something with the baking company that makes me get over that next, kind of like puts me to that next step. Whereas I've also been very comfortable with that too. I've been very comfortable with being where I'm at with the baking company, and being where I'm at with certain partnerships I have that give me a decent living, and I live good here, but I could be changing that as well. So I think that for me, it's been kind of like that kind of, and Max actually inspired me when he said therapy, because he got a little vulnerable talking about his therapy. And this is kind of vulnerable for me too. It's like being able to really sit with that, meditate with that idea that what are you really going to lose if you start embracing a little bit more change, and being okay with whatever that is and stepping into a new path and paradigm that might put me to a new place that takes me to an exponentially different level that was 100 times better than before.
Yeah, that reminds me a lot of the work of, you know, folks like Anthony DeMello, and the idea of detaching yourself from things in life that you thought you were attached to for your happiness, or David Hawkins' book, Letting Go, The Pathway of Surrender, or the book by Michael, I forget his last name, the Surrender Experiment, right? Just this whole idea, especially for like, you know, driven guys like us, releasing control can be difficult. And when you do, there's real freedom about it, and it can even manifest itself biologically or physically. You know, people who are control freaks or have OCD-like tendencies, you know, I'm the same way. They tend to have tight psoas, tight abs, tight pelvic floor musculature, all those things that you'd associate with being able to let go, right? Mm. Constipation, issues like that. And it's interesting how when you begin to learn to let go, when you begin to learn to release control, to surrender, to trust that God will provide, or to be open to change, even if it's just like, whatever, getting a new haircut or trying a new food or going out at a time you normally wouldn't go out.
Totally.
It seems to change you physically as well.
That's
so, yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, I got to hit the road pretty soon, so I have to think of something kind of brief. This is going to sound trite compared to what you guys have just said about, you know, being able to therapy and releasing control. But I would say one other thing I'd throw in there that's actually been kind of cool for me in terms of infusing me with more energy and positivity. And just one of those things that I tried, and like some of the other things I've mentioned, just kind of stuck with me that I like, because 90% of the stuff I tried doesn't stick. It's just like, oh, that was interesting. I'm not going to make that part of my routine. I discovered in a book I was reading this morning routine called the 5 Tibetan Longevity Exercises.
Yeah, I know the five Tibetan Rites, yeah.
The 5 Tibetan Rites. Yeah. I found a website. I think it's T5T.com. It has like a poster and a book that walks you through it. I started doing like 21 reps of each every morning. Hard. Did it this morning.
Dude, in the beginning,
it's hard.
In the beginning,
it was kind of hard. By the time you get to 21 reps. But I feel like aligned energetically. I feel as though I'm more open. I feel more positivity during the day. I feel like my journaling and my meditation and my prayer, everything else just becomes a little bit more enhanced by that ritual. So I've been doing, you know, every morning, I even taught my boys how to do them, these five Tibetan, you know, I'm going to explain them all in audio because it'd be easier for people to just like Google it.
I did them years ago, but I never would like stick to it for 21.
My routine now, yeah.
But yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah.
Is one of them butthole sunning?
No.
Butthole, arguably, if you were to do it nude in the sunshine,
you would be doing that.
You would get a little bit of butthole exposure, which I guess brings us full circle to what we started off with, you know, the sugar alcohols and air coming out the butthole to
flatulence,
photonic energy in the butthole. Well, guys, first of all, if people are listening to this on my show, I'll put the links to everything we talk about and also to Crosby's Instagram channel and his page and his cookies and Max's wonderful podcast and some of the episodes Max and I have done in the past. I'll put all of that at bengreenfieldfitness.com/3way. I think that's a rememberable URL. bengreenfieldfitness.com/3way, T-H-R-E-E, way. For this discussion, and if you guys have your own comments, questions, feedback, you know, new training, nutrition, biohacks, you know, relationship routines that have stuck and worked for you, feel free to join in the discussion session there and throw in your own tips. And thanks for doing this, fellas. It's always fun to just like have a chat you'd normally have anyways, but have the mics on and just get to know each other better. So this is good.
This was awesome. I couldn't think of a better like roundtable, you know, gaggle to get together. This was
super fun.
This was great. And we started off with cookies.
We did we didn't do alcohol, we didn't do weed, we just ate a little bit of cookie and look at us, we crushed it anyways. Well, fellas, thanks for coming on, and again, folks, bengreenfieldfitness.com/3way, and I'm Ben along with Crosby Taylor and Max Lugavere. Did you say Lugavere or Lugavere?
Lugavere.
Lugavere. Lugavere. Signing out. Have an amazing week, you guys.
Well, thanks for listening to today's show. You can grab all the show notes, the resources, pretty much everything that I mentioned over at bengreenfieldfitness.com, along with plenty of other goodies from me, including the highly helpful Ben Recommends page, which is a list of pretty much everything that I've ever recommended for hormones, sleep, digestion, fat loss, performance, and plenty more. Please also know that all the links, all the promo codes that I mentioned during this and every episode help to make this podcast happen and to generate income that enables me to keep bringing you this content every single week. So when you listen in, be sure to use the links in the show notes, use the promo codes that I generate, because that helps to float this thing and keep it coming to you each and every week.